And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
This is the Athletic Football Show.
Welcome to the Athletic Football Show. I'm Robert Mays. Great show for you guys today. Our Bears writer, Adam Johns, is going to be joining us a little bit later as part of our series of team writer visits that we've done during training camp. I was at Bears practice last Thursday. It's very hard to keep track of the timing on all of these. Really enjoyed talking to Adam. Obviously, it's a team I spend a lot of time worrying about, thinking about, mulling over. So we got into the weeds on a lot of different stuff. Before that, though, very excited to welcome my good friend, Nate Tice. Nate, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing very well. It was just you two, so it was just you two just gushing for like an hour straight.
It was in a coat closet in Hallis Hall. This is not a joke.
That's
amazing. We were in the coat closet, just tucked away, worrying about when Justin Fields should play and how bad the offensive line is and how much time Matt Nagy has. We'll get to all of that. You and I are going to talk about kind of the next step in some of the shows that we've done over the last couple of weeks. We hit some of the new quarterbacks in places that we wanted to see. We hit some of the most intriguing first-year play callers that we wanted to talk about. Sheil and I talked about the offenses because you can't do every single show, so we had to take a little bit of a break. Now we're going to talk about defenses. We did the top 10 offenses with Sheil. I want to just make a little bit different with the defenses. I want to talk about just the units we're most excited to watch, the ones that we are looking forward to the most this year. This could be because they're doing a scheme tweak. This could be because of the personnel that this team has. It could be a combination of the two. So we're going to try to get to, how many do we have here? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. We have 8 defenses.
A quarter of the league.
Which feels pretty good. Yeah, you know, yeah. It's fine. Some will be a little bit more in depth than others. But that's what we're going to do. We're going to get to the defenses that we are most looking forward to watching here in a couple weeks, buddy. We're getting there now.
No.
It's August 25th. We are in striking distance.
Week zero of college. That's how you know. It's like week zero of college. We're like, oh, yeah, here we go. Now we're getting into it.
You remember those days where you could get to school 2 weeks early, drink every single day, and just not even feel it at all? I mean, I used to get there in the middle of August when we had our just awful, awful house. It was on Cliff Drive in East Campus in Columbia, Missouri. Our floors were so sloped that the floor and the bottom of the wall had like a 6-inch gap between them. That's the type of house we lived in. And for 2 weeks, we went out every single night and I just didn't even feel it. It was completely possible.
That was usually when training camp was winding down for us, was move-in day, which was the middle of August in Madison. So it was almost like a tease because you'd be coming home we'd all had mopeds and stuff and scooters, and you'd be just coming back. And I lived on Mifflin, which is, you know, for 2 years, which was the Mifflin Block Party, which is famous in Madison. And I'm coming home and I just see everyone just couches. They're drinking beer on the street, like, or getting ready to move in. They're just, all right, we'll tailgate our move-in, basically, as they wait for get the keys and everything. And you're just coming back middle of 2 a.m. about to go take a nap. And you're just like, soon, just get to this first game so we can go out after. That's basically what it was. So didn't maybe have as much fun as for those right before orientation week for as you did.
Well, as a man who's about to turn 34 years old tomorrow, let's just say that those days are long, long behind me. All right, let's get to some of these defenses. And let's start with a team that you and I think are both really excited about. And that's the New York Giants. Maybe a little bit surprising to be on this list with a lot of other defenses that were probably in or around the top 10 last year. But I think both of us believe that Patrick Graham is a really promising defensive coach. They finished 17th in weighted defensive DVOA last year and just did so many really interesting things, notable things. Obviously, that Seattle game sticks out, where they were just playing a bunch of wonky too high coverages and really messing with Russ's head, really getting after him in a lot of different ways. That's the game that jumps out. But I think if you look at a lot of the other aspects of this defense, it aligns with some of the other creative forward thinking philosophies and ideologies that we've seen from other defenses, right? So if you look at carries into boxes of six or fewer defenders, which is a big storyline last year with all the too high that the Rams are playing, everything else, and the Fangio ideas. If you look at the teams in rankings for carries into those boxes, the Broncos were number one, the Rams were number two, and the Giants were number three. They had 230 carries into boxes of six or fewer defenders, more than half of the running plays against them last season. And if you look at the body types they have, it makes total sense. So this is a team that is playing with lighter boxes. It's trying to steal gaps back. They have a bunch of body controllers on their front. They're playing a bunch of coverage behind it, a lot of different mixtures. I just think that the underlying ideas that permeated this defense last year are really encouraging and interesting. And now their personnel is better. They've gotten some more guys on the back end. They have Adoree Jackson. They're getting Xavier McKinney the entire year. So what that looks like, these ideas grafted onto better players, that's why this team is at the top of the list for me.
And what you're talking about too is like those bodies up front. It's running into those lighter boxes as opposed to what the Rams did, or, you know, they're running more cover two too high as opposed to, you know, the quarters or cover six that, you know, Rams and the Fangio, which is, so it's kind of like, it's fun to see like a different
two high
defense.
They led the league in cover two snaps last year, the Giants.
Yeah. And that's what we talked about a month or two ago. And we were talking about the varied looks from it. They're also, you know, splitting the guy, the mics going all the way back, you know, just how they just kind of just throw, you know, little different flavors on it. And up front, it's, like when the Bucks were rolling in the early 2000s running cover two, it was like, you know, you picture Warren Sapp and all that. They're just shooting gaps. They rush with four and they just shot the gaps, and Derek Brooks doing what he's doing, and John Lynch in the back, and Rondé Barber making plays. But it's this variation of cover two is like they're comfortable dropping eight into coverage and mucking up any quick game throws. And because they have such big bodies up front, that as opposed to like stealing a gap and a half, it's like, no, they're truly two gapping.
Yeah,
like
they
Because they can. And it's as opposed to rushing with four, running games and everything, they are comfortable running those either three guys or four with big bodies. And just, and I'm going to talk about a different team later that this has been their philosophy for 20 years, spoilers, is that they push the pocket onto the quarterback, make him feel uncomfortable, and then also just make it tight windows. And that's why that Seattle game stuck out, is because Russ, that's not Russ's favorite thing. He wants you to blitz him. He wants you to create chaos, because then he creates chaos on top of that through going deep or scrambling. But if you just push the pocket and don't break contain and just make it uncomfortable for quarterbacks, it's not a lot of guys are really comfortable throwing from that launch point. And that's what that's their philosophy. And then a couple blitzes, you know, they throw a couple of little things in, you know, some creative stuff, but it's cool seeing these different flavors of zone coverage kind of coming back throughout the league after we've seen nothing but man and cover three for a few years. But it's nice to see this coming back and just different flavors of it. And yeah, it's an exciting defense. And if you want to play with the three down front like they do, either in the 3-4 or the tight mint stuff that they want to do where they drop one of the ends, that's how they're going to win, is winning up front with Dexter Lawrence, Leonard Williams, just kind of crushing that pocket play after play after play. And it'll wear down offenses over a long game.
They lose Dalvin Tomlinson, which is mm-hmm. notable, but you still have, like you mentioned, Williams and Lawrence can play that
yes.
way. And so I think that they use Williams. I mean, he split his snaps essentially between the edge and inside last year. They're going to move him around. He is the most yep. important player on that front. They're going to move yep. him around a ton. But I think with BJ Hill, Lawrence, and Williams, you still have those guys that can eat up bodies. And it's funny, this team really wanted Leonard Floyd last year in free agency. They didn't get him. They draft Azeez Ojulari in the second round this year, who's essentially like Leonard Floyd.
Same person. Yeah.
So Leonard Floyd is, and you look at them, you'd say, oh, that's not true. Like, you know, they both went to Georgia. That's where it stops. Leonard Floyd's 6'6". Azeez Ojulari is 6'2". Azeez Ojulari has 34.5-inch arms. His yeah, arms are longer than Leonard Floyd's. So he's 3.5 inches shorter, but he's longer than Leonard Floyd is. And so using him on some of those twists, allowing him to kind of, just imagine in your mind those plays where Leonard Floyd was catching Russell Wilson on some mm-hmm. of those stunts. That mm-hmm. is, Azeez Ojulari, put your arms out, man. Just give the quarterback a hug, because we'll send him to you. I would imagine mm-hmm. we're going to see a lot of that different front mechanic stuff with the players and the types of players this team has.
Yes. It's going to be fun. And that's the thing. It's like we're talking about the front, talking about all these games. And they also have awesome players like James Bradberry at corner, who's going to like just...
That ties it all together, right?
Yes. Yes. Him. Like, just him. Like, just because he's basically closing off a whole side. And then, like, the safety that's over the top, if they are in cover two, doesn't have to cheat as much over the top unless Russell Wilson wants to make a god-tier throw, like we've talked about before, up the sideline. But that's what having him high-lowing that takes away a whole – it just makes it really, really hard because the soft spots in cover two are the hole shots. And then the dig area, the seam dig area, that's the soft spots in cover two. If you have a corner that can take away the hole shot, and then now it's really just three spots or a check down that quarterback has to find spots, it's hard to do that 20 throws a game. You can maybe do it four or five, but that's what a guy like Bradbury does. It just unlocks that kind of stuff. You can run anything you want with a guy like him.
And I'll be curious. So last year, again, they led the league in cover two snaps. I think they were fifth in cover three snaps. Really zone heavy team. If you look at it, they played man on 32.4% of their third downs last year. It was 28th in the NFL. Patrick Graham does not want to do that. Even if he's willing to be a little bit more flexible, he literally came out earlier this summer and said, in this league, you have to play man coverage on third down and in the red zone. And now, with Adoree Jackson, with Xavier McKinney the whole year, now let's just imagine it. You go in nickel, you bring Logan Ryan down into the slot, you bring McKinney and then Peppers as your safeties on those plays, and now you have Adoree Jackson, James Bradbury on one side, you can play man coverage now.
Yeah.
This is not a team with Isaac Yiadom and whoever else is their second quarter anymore. I don't know if Adoree Jackson's a $13 million player, but I do know that as your second corner, he's better than what they had a year ago, and now you get potentially 16 games out of Xavier McKinney. I just think it's a group that could take a big, big step this year.
Yeah, anyway, if Adoree doesn't have to live in man, that's what's nice about playing zone. he doesn't have to live in it like a guy if he was a corner for the Ravens who has to play it 90% of the time.
Yes,
he just has to do it a couple times, and we're gonna blitz just a little bit, of everything. It's old school defense philosophy. It's just a little bit of everything, and it's kind of cool to see it in 2021.
All right, who's your first team?
Okay, my first team, if I can pull up my notes, my first team is the Green Bay Packers. And I think we both wanted to talk about them.
Absolutely.
And with them, I was picking a friend of ours, Justice Mosqueda. He runs Acme, writes for Acme Packing Company. It's a Packers blog, SB Nation blog. And I just kind of wanted to be like, hey, are they kind of doing anything crazy here? Because they're playing a bunch of backups. So you're trying to look scheme wise. Okay, is there anything a little different than what of course, there's going to be something different compared to what just happened the last few years in the Packers defense. But they really, really want to get the safeties involved. And I mean, that makes a ton of sense from coming from the Rams. And
also when you have those safeties.
I was just about to say, also makes a ton of sense when you have those two freaks at safety like they do, and Adrian Amos and our guy Darnell Savage. You know, got to keep the streak going. Got to mention him another I went on a different podcast, an offensive fantasy podcast, and I got to mention Darnell Savage on it. I was Hayden Winks and Josh Norris. I was so proud of myself.
Guess who I was standing next to today?
Who?
Your boy, number 15 on the Vikings. He was right there. I was in his presence today. The vibe.
How was it?
It was great.
Did he bring the vibe?
He brought the vibe. Apparently Zimmer's been saying stuff about him after games, like calling him out in press conferences in a good way. And for Mike Zimmer to do that, Mike Zimmer to talk about fifth round rookie offensive players. Yep. Your guy is trending in the right direction, my friend.
That's great. I know he got the kick return and had a cool little Skycam view on the TV copy. And I had about like seven people tag me like a second after it happened. I was just like, oh, great. I'm going to know every one of his touches throughout this whole entire season.
All right, let's get back to your other guy here. How do you think that they're going to use those safeties in Green Bay?
Well, and just one thing is when you're we've mentioned before, if you're going to play in that quarters defense, the safeties have to be involved in the run. That's yes. How you get away with playing six or less in the box, I should say. And that's how you get away with it. That's how you play. They're two-way guys now. They have to play up and back, playing the pass and the run, play action, all that fun stuff. And when you have two studs, like legit top 10 guys, top eight, top seven, really, top eight, and Darnell Savage, Adrian Amos, is that, okay, let's get them involved. It's just like unlocking these guys. Let's let playmakers make plays. And not only that is they're bringing a lot of the one east pressures that the Rams love. Just that single linebacker up the A or B gap, drop one of the ends. They're doing that a little bit. And it's really kind of Oren Burks has had a couple of nice preseason blitzes off of that. Like he can bring his real long. He's been a fun backup to watch. But when you got guys like Kenny Clark, the Smith brothers, and then also, I always say brothers, but I'm just going to call them the Smith cousins, and then, but also emerging guy in Rashawn Gary, who really came on at the end of last year. You only can rush four or just bring the one dog pressure. They're just trying to create edginess in their pass rush. Just edginess. And how they do it, games, the gap and a half in the run game, twists, bring the single linebacker, just a couple little safety blitzes just to kind of make really get those guys involved because they're both plus guys in that type of scheme and type of blitzing. And they've had plenty of experience in the last couple of years. So I really do think it's just going to be a really fun, dynamic defense, especially with the talent they have. I think whatever you run, they're going to unlock some guys. But I think this type of defense and really just highlighting star players, it's I think they're really going to pop this year more than I think people are expecting.
Who do you think, when Kenny Clark, Za'Darius Smith, Rashawn Gary, and Preston Smith are on the field at the same time together, who is the lightest person in that group?
It's Za'Darius, right?
It's Preston Smith. Do you know how much he weighs?
No way.
270 pounds. The wow. lightest guy among those four weighs 270 pounds.
And those are all athletic dudes.
That's what you're working with here. We talk about this all the time. I mean, we did this in the defensive trends podcast that when we talked to Deontay. That idea of just rushing four, you're in your gap, make shit happen, those days are over. Yep. You want to toss bodies around. You want guys that are wrecking balls. And that's what they have. They have these really powerful rushers that can just displace people with some of those stunts and games, and they're almost interchangeable. If you want to move Za'Darius inside and have Rashawn Gary outside, if you want to move Rashawn Gary inside and move Za'Darius outside, the ways they can attack you with those fronts, and that's the thing that really jumps out about the stuff that the Rams did, is the front structures and the ways that they played. They were unpredictable. On any given play, it was hard to know who was going to be lining up where in the front, whether it was the personnel or their alignment. The Packers have the guys to do that. And like you mentioned, they also have the guys to do it in the safety spots. It was funny when I was there, I was asking Adrian Amos about it. I was like, do you feel like you've gone back in time a little bit because it's all the Fangio stuff? And he's like, yes. He's like, and he is a perfect fit for this because he's done it. The language is the same. The ideas are the same. And that's the fun part about this defense is that it doesn't require a lot of imagination to see how these ideas that the Rams and Broncos use can work with this group. Amos is a one-for-one trade-off. We've already seen him do it. Savage is the perfect safety for that system. You can literally do as much of that backside lock stuff with Jair Alexander as you want to. If you want to play that 4-3 lock where he's just taking up one side of the field and you want to flip the coverage to the other side, you can do that all the time. I think this could be like one of the best defenses in the NFL if Joe Barry hits the ground running. I really do.
I really do too. Watching it in preseason, and I couldn't believe, like, I can't believe I'm saying this because I try always, not even just a grain of salt, but more like an ounce of salt with preseason stuff. I'm watching it. I'm like, yeah, no, this makes sense. Like, I just saw the backup safeties just kept flying up. They're coming up in the box. And I'm like, yeah, this is going to work. I really do think this is going to work. And that's the thing. My entire rant at the beginning of this, praising them, I didn't even mention Jair Alexander, who just kind of, like you just said, can lock down a whole side. He's a top five corner. It's going to be exciting stuff. I mean, it really is. And if you get pissed off Aaron Rodgers on offense, you know, it could be some fireworks for that team. So I think that's been one of our kind of, I wouldn't say realizations, but really something we shine a light to throughout this offseason was how stacked the Packers are. I mean, we did it in the non-quarterback draft, and we're like, they got a lot of dudes, a lot of dudes. You're bringing up the wrecking ball stuff. Like, Kenny Clark is the epitome of that. It's just wreck shit. It's just big athletic dudes just going. It's not one guy, like you said, just shooting. All right, we got a 20 sack guy, and then we got a whole bunch of nothing. You know, it's a bunch of guys. Any of them can make the play. It's scary stuff, and it's going to be really fun. I really do think. I think this, I could see the light in what they're doing in Green Bay, so it's going to be cool.
I was a guy that Ben Fenno, who writes a little bit for The Athletic and is a guy, somebody that we both know. He was pointing out Tedrell Slayton, their fifth round pick, just eating up blocks in the preseason. And that, again, it's preseason, but that's the type of guy you need in this defense. You need that Sebastian Joseph Day that comes out of the woodwork, who's just going to eat a gap and a half whenever you need him to, and just be able to cycle those guys in and out of the game. And that's exactly what a guy like that seemingly can give you. All right, let's get to our next one here. We don't have to spend a ton of time on this. I just feel like we need to point it out because of the pure amount of talent they have. The Broncos finished 13th in defensive DVOA last year. Allow me to read off some of the guys who got more than 300 snaps for this team, okay? Yeah. Not even to more than 250 snaps. Michael Ojemudia had 852 snaps for this team last year. AJ Boye played 410 snaps for this team last year. Asang Bassi played 382 snaps. Devontae Bosby played 277 snaps at corner. We are flipping out the Michael Ojemudia, AJ mm-hmm. Boye, Bossy and Busby snaps for Kyle Fuller and Ronald Darby. And that's before we add Patrick Surtain to the mix. Yeah. And Von Miller is back.
Yep. Yep. Decent, right? Like, seems like a couple guys there that are notable. And oh, we didn't even mention Justin Simmons, you know, like Mr. Chubb. Like, it's ridiculous. It's like, I actually was just laughing because I have the roster up right here. And then Michael Ojemudia.
Ojemudia is how I'm going. Okay, what I'm going with.
I know. Okay. Well, you're so much better than I am. I just spit it out. It's like, however it comes across, hits my brain first. But with him, it's just like, that's what's hilarious is even on the roster, the depth chart, he's listed third.
Yes.
You know, how many snaps he played last year. We've talked about all the Fangio defense this whole offseason. And it's like, well, let's look at the actual Fangio defense. And it's not like he's coaching a bunch of scrubs where it's like, you know, the scheme's good, though. You know, the scheme's good. It's like, no, it's just stars littered throughout. And it's cool. And they're going to be with the guy that's actually going to be. And having Fuller there is going to be really cool. Like, I know you've mentioned it before, but like, that's going to be really fun to see him back.
It's the best place he's ever been. The best he's ever been. Is getting to just play that off coverage in that system where he's on that the cover four side where he can just play off and play downhill. Yep. He's might be the best player in the NFL. He might be the best off corner in the league. And he gets to go now with the head coach and the defensive coordinator Ed Donatell, who was his defensive backs coach in Chicago. Like there's no imagination required here.
No.
Sometimes with really, really, really talented units, you think, do they have the guy that can bring it all together? The guy that can bring it all together is the best defensive coordinator in the NFL. Like it's not a from. Exactly. So now the guy that everyone else is trying to steal from has the best players. I think it's probably going to go pretty well.
I did a show today and they asked, they're like, man, what is this? Is Sean Payton going to be able to adapt his offense without quick aim and throwing it quick with Breeze? Is this offense going to be able to handle throwing it deep? And I was like,
did you watch the 2011 Saints?
Yeah, it was like, and that's why I kind of was like, well, it's kind of time as a flat circle, actually. That's what's funny about the NFL. And it was like, yeah, he's going to be fine. But that's the saying. It's like, is Sean Payton going to be okay running play action stuff? It's like, yeah, is Vic Fangio going to be okay to handle these two high defenses, cover six, cover four, and all the stuff that comes with it? It's like, yeah, they're going to be okay. And like you said with Fuller, that's what he's so smart. And that a smart corner playing off is such a different world than a smart corner playing in man. Man, they teach man to corners that you sign off the street, you know, off practice squad to play for a game. They play man the rest of the game because it's the easiest coverage. Hey, you got this guy. There's no rules with it, you know. So I mean, seriously, that's why man coverage is pretty easy. It's like, yeah, I got this man, you know, and then that's okay. So, but getting into these zones with different rules, different techniques and stuff, yeah, it's just going to be a comfort thing. And it's just, you just look at it and you're like, already Von Miller was, it's funny when you don't see a guy for a year, all of a sudden they come back and it's like, oh yeah, that guy was a star. And there's another player I'll talk about in a minute.
One of the best players of his generation.
A guy who literally you had to account for. We had protections in Oakland, literally just called 54, 55 Von, because that's what it was just called, just Von. And then it became a rule because we used it for other games, but it was developed in one game against them in 2016. And we just used it. And then we were like, do we change the name of who we do it to? And they're like, no, we'll just keep calling it Von. We just know who the guy is because it just flowed better. You're not going to just say some blah, blah, blah. If it's three syllables, it doesn't come out as smooth. So that's, that's Von Miller. That's only a couple of years ago. But I still, even if it's 90, 80% of what he was, it's still a freaky dude. And that's not even including Bradley Chubb. Who we've, you know, I've done a bad job even mentioning him enough because he's still a very good player as well. And the fact that he doesn't have to be the guy or they could both be 1A, 1B, that's scary in itself. Yeah, you can rush forward with those two being there. And then Lindsey Jones' favorite, Shelby Harris.
I'll be curious to see how the cornerback snaps end up shaking out. Obviously, Callahan will play in the slot, but at what point and what role does Surtain get to play? Like, is he the fourth corner at the beginning? Is he, how, like, I just don't know how those snaps are going to shake out. It's a good problem to have. having too many corners in this current day and age, when if you want to play dime all the time, you just can. That is a benefit, and it seems like this team just has a ton of malleability on the back end in the way that you want to, in the way you want to have it right now.
Surtain goes to the Broncos. He's the fourth. If he went to the Cowboys, like everyone expected it to go, like he would be like, just he's our guy, man. You're our guy, man. Like, hey, you got him one-on-one the entire game. that's what it would have been. Or probably one side with Dan Quinn's defense. But it's same thing. He would have been the number one day he walked in. This time, now he gets to go with the best and learn from some really good, smart players. And he's already a smart player in himself. That's magic. That's when magic happens, man.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
All right, who's the next one on your list?
I was going to go with the San Francisco 49ers.
I am so curious as to why you put this team on here. I don't disagree. I'm really interested in what you have to say about it.
It was funny when I texted you that, and you just were like, 49ers. Like, okay, yeah. But it's with them, it's more of a personnel thing, I think, more than anything. With D'Amico Ryans, bizarre that he's defensive coordinator already. How old are we getting, man? That he's the DB all calling plays. Like he just started coaching like 3 or 4 years ago. Which I think is awesome. Kyle Shanahan, that's another thing that I love, is that he wants his players, former players, to be coaches for him. I think that's a really cool thing. Like kind of like a mix on his staff of good coaches and former players that he kind of gets along, assistant receiver coaches and stuff.
Austin was the assistant receivers coach there, right, last year, and then Wes Welker is their receivers coach.
Yep.
Now Miles Austin, I believe, is the receivers coach for Mike LaFleur with the Jets. It's interesting to watch it all kind of move around.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of cool. I like coaches that kind of do that. Guys they like and they tag them, because that means they're paying attention. You know, like, hey, this, because he's a defensive guy. He's like, hey, I obviously was like, hey, this guy's pretty good. But anyways, back to the, I don't think they're going to change much scheme wise. Having said all that, I think the one thing that Ryans did bring, and I'm just gleaning a little bit of the preseason again, ounce of salt, is maybe a little more third down pressures, a little more varied. I think that would be the one thing he brings that's a little different. You see that sometimes when guys take over or come in. When Vance Joseph went to the Broncos, he ran all Wade Phillips stuff on first and second down. And on third down, it was all Vance Joseph stuff. He was like, okay, now it's my time to shine. Totally different. So it was like you had a good game plan against two different defenses, basically. I could see it kind of being like that. He's like, hey, as Mike Love said, don't F with the formula. Like, we're going to stick with that. And then also on third down, maybe throw in what his ideas. But again, we're talking about Von Miller coming back. Nick Bosa coming back is dynamite. I rewatched him again before he got hurt. And it's like, oh my God, he's going to be really good. Thankfully, it was an early injury. It sounded like it was clean. So hopefully, he's really going to come back with a force. Armstead is Armstead. D Ford, hopefully, he's more solid than anything. And then Kinlaw has been banged up as well. But, he did have flashes of good. I rewatched him recently. I was hoping, he's just banged up. It is what it is. And that's like you're hoping that that's not going to be a tag on him. But then more than anything, they have Fred freaking Warner, who I'm so excited to watch continue his career. Big money now. But one of the most fun players to watch any position is Fred Warner.
What does Fred Warner allow them to do? What does he give them as a linebacker that you wouldn't have from other guys playing that position? What does it free you up to do elsewhere?
Put it this way, he is one of the best coverage players in the league, any position. I didn't say corner, linebacker, or anything, period. He can cover, run with a receiver, and then on the next snap, he can read out a run, read a guy pulling, and fill the run. He's you know, what Bobby Wagner's been for years in Seattle. There's like, you know, it's just how it goes, I guess. Just one comes along every 5 years, 7 years. And that's what he is. He can carry that number three receiver going on over if they want to stay in the cover three quarters world, rotating down. Like, he can do all that. Like, you have seen him manned up with receivers in slot and run with them, whip routes. He covered Julian Edelman on a whip route like it was nothing. But then on the next play, he's taking on a puller and whapping him and then making the tackle for a 3 yard gain. It's like he could just do everything. He's so smart. And he's not as big as a lot of traditional, I mean, he's still big. He's a big NFL linebacker, but traditional linebacker sense, but he's more athletic. He's kind of the new age linebacker, or the epitome of a new age linebacker. So that's kind of what he does. short answer, everything. He kind of does. And you know, there's another guy I'm excited to see there is Mo Hurst. I was just about to bring him up.
How excited are you for Mo Hurst to be, who's making $1 million this year, to get 7.5 sacks and get a 2-year, $20 million deal somewhere next offseason? It's called the Chris Kocurek plan. It's the Chris Kocurek career revitalization plan. It's exactly what Kerry Hyder did last year.
It's like Saban with all the coaches, all the quality, all the coaches he hires. He says, yeah, it's just the rehab. He's just going to bring him in. Go, hey, just 1 year with me, 1 year on the cheap with me. You don't get to call plays, but hey, you got a job now, right?
Tuscaloosa, you use that as a springboard to your next college head coaching job. The interior of the Niners offensive line is your springboard to your next big contract in the NFL, no matter where you came from before that.
The cradle of defensive tackles. That's what it is.
And I think that obviously he's not there anymore now, but what has happened with this defense over the last 3 to 4 years, I think is such an indication of the benefits of humility and the willingness to change. Because the Niners looked at what they were doing up front and said, this isn't working. We need to fold something else into this. And they went and they won a bidding war for Chris Kocurek before the 2019 season. They have this attacking style front now that unlocks guys like Armstead, where Bosa is a perfect fit. You have the best versions of all these guys up front. And then Joe Woods comes along that same year, and all of this kind of Seattle-based cover three stuff that they were doing, it's like, well, we need to mix this up a little bit. We need to throw like a man counterpunch here, more quarters on early downs. And watching the system kind of evolve over the last few years into what it was last year, which is a top 10 defense without some of their best players, is just a testament to the staff's willingness to embrace new ideas, to try different things, and to just say, if we don't evolve, we're going to go the way of the dinosaur here.
Yeah. It's so funny you said that. I was just talking about some of it earlier. We're talking about some offensive coordinator, but we're just talking about that's what so happens over and over again, you know, not for long. NFL is just guys don't adapt, or they're stubborn and go, well, it worked once. Hey, we just need to execute better. But like you said, it's just evolving with the times or evolving to their personnel. They went to too high last year. We talked about this, is that seeing them change that defense throughout the year last year with injuries or just realizing what they were, that's what made me go like, oh, Salah is a hell of a coach. Like, he is so much more than what I thought he was. But that was also identifying that, hey, Jimmy Ward's pretty good coming from too high. You know, it's just IDing, hey, these are our good players. Let them be good. Like, just let them be good. And also, like, every team needs this. They need a couple guys to hit that are younger and stuff like that. And like, even watching their backups are playing fast.
Yeah.
And that's always a good indicator, like, that, okay, this team's pretty well coached. That's what's scary about like watching the Jaguars second team O-line. You're like, oh boy. But watching the backups play well, you're like, oh, that's how you can see really good coaching, when you don't see the center looking left and right, getting, you know, your number one in Chicago getting his head smoked up and not signing the protection right. Like, one of them had to pick it up, but we can talk about that later. But like I was just talking about too, is just finding these guys. Like, they had a corner just stood out, like Demodre Lenore, and I might be butchering his name. He's a rookie from Oregon. He had like three plays where I was like, who the hell is this guy? And I finally looked him up and I was like, he's a rookie? He's like a fifth round rookie, because he just looked so sharp. And so I was like, wow.
Listen, they're going to need some corners to step up for them, because that is the one area where it's a tenuous situation. Like, it's a lot of eggs in the Jason Verrett basket.
Yeah. And a lot of eggs, and hey, our pass rush will get home in 2.5 seconds.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's what they're going with. And I'm still excited to watch it unfold. But yeah, the 49ers defense, though, I think it's going to be one of those where after a while we're like, oh shit, yeah, a little better than I recalled, even if it's a different version of what we saw 2 years ago or even last year.
One more just quick offshoot of the Niners here is the Browns. We talk about the connection there. Obviously, Joe Woods was the passing game coordinator, I think only for a year in his stop between Denver and being the defensive coordinator with Cleveland. So if you look at just some of the numbers, the Niners played the most quarters on first down in the NFL last year. I think the Browns were second. So you have a lot of similar ideas carrying over. And the way the Browns built this offseason, I think is really notable and really indicative of a shift just fundamentally in the league. Andrew Berry is somebody who comes from Indianapolis and Philadelphia. How are those, and the Indianapolis teams were the Dwight Freeney, Robert Mathis teams. And then the Eagles were built with Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox, Derek Barnett. They're back to front teams. And I think watching the Browns build this team from front to back this offseason is such an indication of the shift in thinking that's going on around the NFL. And I think Andrew Berry looked at everything going on and said, we need more resources on the back end. This is the way that we should start to build now. This is a team that wants to live in dime. Joe Woods told me that last week. They want to be a dime team. And if you think about where they came from and just the ways they want to play. So now they have the corners to be a dime team. They have Greg Newsome as their third cornerback now. They can play three safeties when Grant Delpit comes back with Ronnie Harrison. You have so many different ways to put six defensive backs on the field. And I'm just curious about how they're going to do it and how it's going to look. So just the experiment there and how they use their resources. I don't know how good it's going to be, but I'm curious what it's going to look like in practice.
Yeah. I mean, even just their first two picks makes all the sense in the world. Greg Newsome and JOK, you know, the linebacker from Notre Dame. It's like, okay.
Who looks ridiculous already.
Does he? Yeah, I know. I watched him, but I was just kind of like, I haven't really read him in practice or anything. Because that's, if they want to be in this dime, they can almost be in the nickel and get away with dime with this, because he's going to be that kind of a hybrid type of player. Yeah. So I'm really excited. You know, so it's kind of like, get the best of both worlds. That's why these kind of hybrid-y kind of guys.
Think about a world where you can have Delpit, Harrison, John Johnson as your three safeties. Your three corners are Denzel Ward, Greg Newsome, and Troy Hill. And then JOK is your only linebacker on the field. You think you'll be able to cover some people if that's the way that you play dime?
Speed. That's what it is. And also, that's a other thing. Well, it's going to happen anyways because of the number changes, but that's so hard for points and protections because it's this, unless the guys are all on the same page, some guys will get confused going, which guy's mine? Because in protection schemes, you go, you're matching like bodies. You want your running back on a linebacker or a safety. Yeah. So all of a sudden, but now it is, usually it's easy. Oh, okay. Well, there's 26 out there. Well, that's a running back's guy. We're pointing to 54. There's another 52 right there. Oh, that's easy. Those are our guys. You know, just like for offensive line's sake. And all of a sudden now running back has to look and it's like, I got five guys and 20 numbers, you know, and 30 numbers going, all right, this isn't as easy to point out, sift through which guys are mine. So like that's what even dime gets you some front pressure looks, especially if you can get creative with, if you guys spread guys out, because it can kind of really mess with, you can bring anybody. You can literally bring anybody because you can cover with anybody. Now that's the flexibility that provides, having more speed on the field. But we might see some of that more, zone runs on third and long that I love so much to counter it.
All right, let's get to your next one here.
Okay, next one is so weird to like be talking about like kind of like in like a positive light, but like the Patriots.
I am so glad that you mentioned them for that exact reason, because I think I am so guilty of this where my tone just kind of changes when I talk about them, because it's like, oh, the Patriots. But it has to be the opposite with this. Like, I just think we have to keep reminding ourselves just what kind of bodies they added to their defense.
Correct. That's what got me so excited, especially seeing the kind of clips I've seen. It made sense when they signed him, Matt Judon. See, when they signed him, it was like, this makes all the sense in the world. Like, he's a little more expensive
than the guy in that role typically is in their defense. Correct. But similar player. Yes.
Yes. You can. Yes. Yes. That's it's the most premium version that Belichick's ever had. Like, he picks up a truck for this, or like a beat up Camry, you know, but this time he got a Benz, you know, he that's what he did. That's what he's made a living of, just flipping Fords and Chevys. And now he also, like, he bought a German car. Like, all of a sudden he went out and got it, because that's what Judon is. It's not, I'm not saying he's a premium pass rusher, but he is really good at just pushing the pocket. He crushes tight ends. He's good at kind of knifing in. and games and twists, because he's just good at just kind of that straight force. He's not a bendy, twitchy guy, straight force. And that's what's this whole defense is just tied together and all
ass that. Kickers. Just ass kickers. It's ridiculous.
That's what they want. They want to beat the crap out of you up front, and they just push. But I just remember when we were game planning against him, my dad just goes, that's all he does, is just gets big dudes that just kick your ass. Because they just had a bunch of, like, they had 270 pound Mike linebackers, all the other guys, everybody else is going fast and twitchy. They're getting 280 pound outside linebackers to just push. And that's what Belichick's gone after his whole career. And but what they do in the passing game ties into that. Because that's why they play that man coverage where they double somebody, and they put they put Gilmore or whoever their number one is on their other number one, or maybe their number two option, is that they're trying to get the quarterback to just double clutch and hold the ball, just at, get to the third read or try and create, get outside of it. So that's what it all ties in together. They run the man coverage. They get these guys that can push the pocket. It's the same thing we talked about earlier. They're just like how the Giants did with Russell Wilson. That's what they're trying to do. They're just making that real tight on the quarterback, because not a lot of guys are comfortable throwing, with a no step, throwing sidearm, throwing like kind of off platform. All these, we get a lot of guys, we see the perfect drop back and the perfect pass. That happens like five times a game, maybe. So that's what Belichick has always leaned into, and they thrive with it. They get a whole bunch of 6 and 8 sack kind of guys, not the 10, 12, 15 sack guys. It's the same philosophy the Legion of Boom went through. Just cover three, but they did it with more five pass rushers, just edginess, cutting in. This is just kind of like a power version of that. Push the pocket, run good coverage behind it, and just make plays and force quarterbacks to make errors.
I think the through line with all of their guys, especially at the linebacker level, or those hybrid linebackers that they have, is size and power, yes. Right? Like Hightower, Judon now. Judon, yes. but they're all slightly different, right? Like Judon is less of an off-ball linebacker than Dante Hightower is, even if Hightower has pass rushing traits, right? They're all these, they're similar body types with slightly different skill sets. Like Uche is way more of a bender than those other guys are. So you can use him in some of those stunts. Like they all have very specific, they have varied skill sets, even if they're cut from the same cloth. And I think that's exactly what you like, where there's a uniformity to the way you can play, but everyone adds their little different flavor to it. And it seems like that's exactly what they have on the second level right now.
And that's Van Noy, Winovich. Like you got those two. Yes. It's just different. Yeah, it's just different colors, different flavors of the exact same thing. And it works. I mean, it's really annoying to play against. I'm telling you, it's really, really annoying, because you're like, man, they're not bringing anything. We know what they're bringing. Like, why is this happening? Like, why? It's just because they just are so, they can rotate guys now. If we don't have just two guys we have to rely on to push, we got four guys. That's tough. It's just like having four bendy, edgy guys, like we talked about San Fran or something like that. And now they just have four pocket strength guys. And then, like, great point with Hightower. That's what Belichick's always gone for. He's gone for that run-plugging linebacker, and Hightower is fantastic at it. It's just, which is those guys. It's just like he could just, boom, and just bite up, blow up a fullback, blow up a guard if he's bringing an A-gap or the B-gap. That's the kind of stuff that they want, and it's kind of cool to see a whole team built around that.
And also, if you're an offensive lineman playing against this team, you just got to be worried about who's going to hit you in the ear hole and who's going to be looping around. Like, how much you have to have your head in a swivel playing against this group is going to be crazy. And then they have the bodies on the back end to play like that. I don't think it's as good as their secondary was a couple years ago, but it's still a pretty darn good group. And it still very much clears the bar for them to play this style if they get a ton more help on the front end. Looking at the Football Outsiders Almanac, which, if you guys haven't picked it up, is an indispensable resource this time of year. I bought it every single year since 2008. In their Patriots chapter, the Patriots added more approximate value over replacement on defense this offseason than any team since 2003. Any team in the last 20 years. And these are guys coming back. It's not just outside additions, but getting Dante Hightower back, getting Kyle Van Noy back. The pure talent and just production they've added on the defensive side of the ball in the last 6 months is staggering.
It's that bump. It's not going from bad to average. It's going from bad to good. It's not just one tier better. It's two tiers or three tiers better. That's the difference. It's not going like, oh my God, we got somebody competent. It's like, no, we got good starter. This is great. We got three or four of them now.
A couple more that we don't have to spend a ton of time on. I think they're just little bits of curiosity associated with that. I can't wait to watch the Chargers, because I just want to see what this defense looks like filtered through Joey Bosa and Derwin James. Talking to Brandon Staley about it, just discussing, the idea that Derwin James and Jalen Ramsey are the same kind of queen on the chessboard in your secondary, but because they play different positions, you just have to think about the ways to flip your resources in a slightly different way. And I think that's really cool. It's like, all right, this is a guy we need to play different roles for us and flip the math sometimes. How do we do that? How do we build the defense on the back end around him? And the same goes for Joey Bosa. And obviously the stuff they did with Khalil Mack and Von Miller is going to be a roadmap for that. Some of the ways that they created one-on-ones for Khalil when Brandon Staley was in Chicago, like you can see it all, a version of it. You can predict it a little bit, but I'm really excited to see what it actually looks like down in and down out, because the personnel is just so much different than it was last year with the Rams.
When they gave Derwin James the green dot, I was like, oh boy, like he wants to highlight him. Like, that's awesome. And that's a guy that you want to highlight. And that's just good coaching, right? That's just, well, hey, let's highlight our best player. Or I know Joey Bosa is ridiculous too, but our best player on the back end, and let him be him. Like, let him come up, let him make plays. That we've talked about again and again and again and again, is that defense is going to highlight safety play. It's going to highlight these guys that can go do shit. And that's what's going to be cool with this. We know it's Joey Bosa. Someone else has to step up on the front. But this defense allows guys to get help. It's not two gapping. It's gap and a half, because now it's two guys covering three gaps, you know, et cetera, or four gaps. But also defensively, if you're in this cover six quarters, you know, variation, you're always going to have help on the left and the right of you. It's just how they bracket things off, how they read the flow of the offensive play. You're always going to just have help. You don't need all these guys isolated and saying, like, we have better guys than your guys. Yeah, they do. And that's what's helped. That's when you can lock a guy on the backside. You can have a safety blitz. And that's what I'm really excited to see, if it's what kind of safety blitz variations he might have. But also just seeing how he can help, like, the second tier, the linebackers, and just seeing how that's going to be over in the middle. I think that's what this defense is going to help more than anything. And you got a couple good players, and it looks like Asante Samuel's having a good camp.
I'm excited to see what he does, because he just seems to be that guy who's just going to be lurking and just picking off like eight passes over the course.
And that's
of the
what
year.
He was in college. Like, yeah. He was such a heady player. It makes sense. You know, like, wow, what a concept. Get, you know, former really good players' sons that went to big programs. Like, wow, that's working out.
And the other side of this is that with the Rams, they did everything they could to minimize the impact of the linebackers. Now you have real linebackers. So what does the defense look like when you don't have to hide those guys and you can feature them in the way that these defenses from this system have done in the past? When you had like the combination of Roquan Smith and Danny Trevathan in this defense, when you had Patrick Willis and Navarro Bowman in this defense. And do you know who else was on those teams as the third linebacker? Michael Wilhoit. Do you know who the linebackers coach is for the Chargers?
Michael Wilhoit.
So it's
I thought you were going to say Chris Borland.
Well, of course, Chris Borland. Chris Borland was the best of those linebackers. Former Grantland NFL podcast star Chris Borland. So that's
favorite
those
Badger
are the type,
of all time.
Those are the types of things that's like, all right, how is this going to work out? Like, all right, you have a linebackers coach who played in a version of this defense where the linebackers were highlighted pieces instead of marginalized pieces. What does that mean for the way the Chargers deploy their linebackers? It's just, these ideas are always filtered through personnel. We say that all the time. So they're going to look inherently different. And I'm just excited to see what version the Chargers are going to roll out there based on their personnel.
Yeah, I think the linebacker point's the most important of all of them, is that actually having guys that, like you said, not trying to hide. And also, but just like I said, you're having to help defense and coverage. It's different from the Seahawks defense, where it was, we have really good players, let's put them all in iso ball. And just, hey, let's have our linebackers carry receivers. Let's have Richard Sherman lock down a whole side, man up. Let's have Earl Thomas back there as the post safety going from, you know, sideline to sideline. These guys, when now it's, they let him play fast. And that's what the linebacker, especially their pick last year, Kenneth Murray, that's what he does. He can run and hit. And that's what you're trying to do. It's like, okay, now I don't have to carry anything. Now I have to play up and down. I can actually just get help from the left and the right. And then once in a while, use my speed on maybe an inside linebacker dog. That's what I just talked about with the Packers. I mean, they're coming from what the Rams did last year. It's just going to be these oneies. And the best guys to do those with, and when I say a single linebacker dog, I'm just saying they rush four, they bring one guy right up the chute, and they drop one of the ends. And when Kenneth Murray, who's a legit speed guy, he can shoot that gap, that's going to be pretty fun to see. And that's what I'm excited to see, is just the pressures and blitzes that maybe he throws with guys that are better at pressuring and blitzing than he had and the other LA team with the Rams.
Speaking of pressure, the last team I wanted to mention here, just out of pure fun, is the Washington football team's defense.
Yeah.
I mean, I just cannot wait to see what that front looks like in year two. I mean, Chase Young just adding 15% more nuance to his pass rush game in year two. And if the, even just think about that. Think about Chase Young being like the 2.0 version of what he was last year. Even that rush he had against Isaiah Wynn in that preseason game, is you get one or two of those a game on top of what Sweat gives you as a number two rusher. Jonathan Allen is one of the most nuanced and skilled interior pass rushers in the entire NFL. Ioannidis is there, Deron Payne. And then now the guys they added on the back end. Like, so last year, the Giants were 28th in man coverage percentage on third down. Washington was 29th. They're 31.3% man on third down. You go get William Jackson. You go get Bobby McCain, who is the free safety from the most man-heavy team in the NFL last year in Miami. You drop him in as your free safety. And the guy they drafted, Benjamin St. Juste, I think in the third round. Did you see how him pushing Jamar Chase around during that game? 6'3", extremely long arms. You drop him in and dime if you want to throw different third down packages at people. So just whatever the third down looks from this team are, if they play a little bit more man coverage, plus just the pure juice in the front four. I mean, this team could be really, really good if they just take that next step and have a few more curveballs to what we saw last year when they were an extremely quarters heavy, zone heavy, pretty bland vanilla team in a lot of ways.
Yeah, last year it was like, okay, we're going to rush five because we have five ridiculous stud pass rushers. And then like, okay, whatever we run on the back end, we run on the back end. You could tell where they were built. They were brought front back, you know, or defensive front to the back. And like you said, like having, getting a little more talent on the back end, now they can just do shit. It's, you could live in that quarters world, or it's a little safer coverage. Like I said, the help defense is,
well, that if you want to play like that on first down, go nuts. But now, what can you throw people on third down? That's the big question.
That's the big changeup. Now we can blitz. Now we can run man. We don't have to run zone blitzes. We can actually run true man blitzes where you're having guys come in, knifing in, all that kind of stuff. Or you just put five pass rushers on the field and get six guys that can cover behind it. That's the fun stuff that that unlocks. And yeah, I mean, what more you can say?
They picked a linebacker in the first round.
From Kentucky, right?
Yeah.
He can roll. That's all I know about him, is that he can roll. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. It makes sense with the defense front is going to be one of the best units to watch, period, of any team, any unit, defensive or offense, special teams unit. That is, the defensive front for Washington is going to be one of the most fun ones to watch this entire year. And I think they're just going to be better from what they built on last year. I do miss seeing Ryan Kerrigan in a Washington uniform, though. That's going to be tough because that's who he just associated with me. That and Purdue when he kicked our ass. But other
somehow
than that,
get over it while watching Chase Young and Montez Sweat play for 17 games.
Chase Young, man. Would you take him number two in our draft?
I took him number two. And as soon as I saw that play against the Patriots, I was like, yep, I made the right decision.
You're already inking him to the new deal. Like,
he can sign it tomorrow if he wants to. I want to sign him before Watt signs his. That's where I'm at. That's where I'm at right
Smart.
Now. That's my thought process.
Smart.
All right.
I like that.
Nate, that's all we got, buddy. You will be back next week on Tuesday for, guess what? The NFC North preview.
Woo!
Today is 1 year since I started at The Athletic, and that will be the anniversary of our first podcast together. We made it. We made an entire year, and we're about to start year number two. A lot of fun stuff coming your guys' way. I will be able to share that with everybody here in the coming days. It's going to be a really fun second season, and I cannot wait to kick it off with you, my friend.
I can't wait. Oh my God, that was a year ago. Can I tell you a quick story real quick?
Of course.
The day that you announced that on Twitter, that you were going to The Athletic, hey, I'm going to start a podcast, tag me in it. Everyone was like, who the hell is Nate Tice? I had food poisoning that day. So my phone, I'm on, like, hovered over the toilet, you know, puking. I'm so sorry, everybody. And there's my phone just on the counter, just just everyone type, congrats, oh my God, that's awesome. People DM me on Twitter, I didn't know you were doing that. And I'm like, I didn't answer anybody for like people just probably thought I just big timed them, like just day one, just like, yep, I'm dropping all of you guys. But I've never this show has been a lot of fun. I'm so excited for year two with you, buddy, and happy 1 year anniversary to you.
Well, happy 1 year anniversary to you as well. And I think the one thing we can say to people is that this year, you and I, twice a week, We will be doing our Sunday night show the same way we did all year last year. We also will be doing a show previewing every single week. So you get two times the Nate in 2022, folks. So I hope you guys are excited about that.
Oh my God. I was trying to cut back on the laughing a little bit. Some people just kill themselves.
You're good, buddy. You know,
it'll be great. I can't wait. It's going to be awesome. Right. Can't wait for the Sunday night shows where we're looking at each other red-eyed going like, okay, what happened again? All right. Yeah. But it's going to be great. It's going to be great podcasting, bud. I can't wait.
All right, bud. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hey, Fidelity. What's it cost to invest with the Fidelity app?
Start with as little as $1 with no account fees or trade commissions on U.S. stocks and ETFs.
That's music to my ears.
I can only talk.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Zero account fees apply to retail brokerage accounts only. $0 commission applies to online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and retail Fidelity accounts. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
All right, guys. It's time now for our conversation with one of our Bears writers at The Athletic, Adam Johns, somebody that I have read for years, obviously, as a Chicago resident and as a Bears fan. We got into everything about this team, the Justin Fields conversation, the timeline for Matt Nagy, what's going to happen on defense with Sean Desai. Really enjoyed exploring all this stuff with Adam. Hope you guys enjoy too. All right, it's time now to welcome a man I have known and read for many, many years, one of our Bears writers at The Athletic, Adam Johns. Adam, how you doing, buddy?
Very good, very good. Welcome to the coat closet.
We are literally in a coat closet at Hallis Hall. It's a quiet place with chairs, and that's all I need at this point. So yes. I made it to Bears camp, which is now at Hallis Hall, which is a little bit different sort of feel. Different sort of feel today. It was, as it was explained to me several times, a glorified walkthrough. And that's kind of the roulette you play when you drop in for a day. Sometimes it's a full-scale practice where you can glean a lot. Sometimes it's a glorified walkthrough. When my main takeaway about Justin Fields was, he looks cool.
He does. That's really it. Especially with the visor. You know, but they're all rocking the visor. All the QBs have that.
I will say he looks cooler than Nick Foles. I'm willing to say that. So obviously not a ton to glean from practice today, but still so much to talk about with this team. And let's start with him, because that's going to be the number one conversation and the number one point of interest until it's not. When do you think he plays, and what do you think the rationale is behind that timeline?
Well, it's just how do you define ready, and who's defining ready? I mean, obviously the final answer in defining ready is I'm at Nagy, but who, like, how much is actually going into this process? I don't think we see it from the outside, because we're not here at night. We're not in these meetings. They're demanding different things. It was just a couple weeks ago where Matt Nagy was demanding that Justin Fields get to his checkdowns faster. Yep. Now, those aren't exciting plays, but that's part of the process. He wants them to see him going through his progressions and stuff like this. So it's very nuanced, But the definition of ready, I don't know what it is, because sometimes he looks very ready. He looked ready against the Dolphins in the preseason game, but that's a preseason game. He feels ready if you talk to him, but at the same time, he makes mistakes here in practice. Now, those mistakes are outnumbered by some amazing throws. The mistakes have been limited, but that definition of ready, it's on Matt Nagy to define it and then throw him in. I don't know when that's going to be. I don't think there's a soft landing spot during the regular season for him just to take the field.
The late season bye makes it a little bit more complicated. Yeah. If it was week five, maybe you think, oh, that fits perfectly well. But you don't want to have that ramp up period three quarters of the way into the year if you want to get him in there earlier.
Right. People have suggested the early game against the Lions because it's the Lions, but still a divisional game. Like there are so many different things going on with the schedule this year with the 17th game, the late bye, all that stuff. It's one of the hardest schedules in the league. No soft landing.
They're a playoff team, Adam. when you make the playoffs, you get a playoff schedule.
There you go. You know, darn that seventh seed. But here we are. I think everybody's eager to see him play in a regular season game, but I don't think it's gonna be week one. We're gonna have to wait.
I think there are two different conversations at play. I think he could be ready, and the smart thing could still not be to put him out there. And for that, I think there's multiple layers to it. The offensive line is so in flux. I mean, you have a guy you drafted 39th overall to be your left tackle. He just had back surgery, which got the Chris Williams vibes. I mean, it's so hard not to. Your mind instantly goes to that place, and hopefully this works out better. But it really throws a wrench into the plans, because when you release Charles Leno and you have this idea of this guy's going to be our left tackle, we'll piece together the right tackle with Afedi and some combination of Larry Borum and whatever, and you feel good about the interior, you can talk yourself into that group in front of a rookie quarterback. Now, it becomes more complicated. You don't have that left tackle that you were planning on. Your right tackle is still on the pup list, and do we have a timeline of when he's supposed to return to practice?
No. We haven't seen him do much physical activity in quite some time.
So that's an issue. Larry Borum, who they're very excited about, Matt Nagy was saying today that, you know, we had a second, third round grade on this guy. We're treating him like that in terms of expectations and everything else. He's been a little bit dinged up. So the options are just limited. And you bring in 39-year-old Jason Peters, which Jason Peters is a Hall of Fame tackle. He's been one of the best players and the standard at the position for over a decade. He's also had trouble staying healthy over the last couple of years. And he was available in the middle of August, most likely for a reason.
Yeah.
It's not a group that you can get excited about. And you're working with a quarterback, like you mentioned, that wants to hunt for big plays. That's what he does. He's going to hang on to it. That's his nature. And I think in a lot of ways, that's a good thing. If you can be accurate down the field and you have that arm, I love it. But at the same time, I don't think he's as prone to protecting himself as some other quarterbacks might not be. You throw Joe Burrow out there last year and you have this death by a thousand paper cuts offense, and you have all these empty sets, and you think, oh, he'll protect himself with the way he sees things. I don't think Justin Fields is that kind of quarterback. I kind of think you have to protect him from himself. And when you're not feeling that good about the offensive line, that is a dicey situation for me over the first quarter of the season.
The counter argument, if you listen to some fans, is, well, if the offensive line is that bad, put the better athlete back there. Put the guy who could escape.
That scares me.
I know, right? And we've seen that play out with Trubisky, where he was a better athlete. He would escape pressure, and he just couldn't slide. Well, Justin Fields, I think, could slide a bit better. I don't like that conversation, at least with Fields, because he likes, like you mentioned, he looks downfield for a long time. I don't want to say he's holding on the ball too long, but you saw him do it at Ohio State. We've seen him do it in practice. Yeah, you've seen Matt Nagy reference this touchdown-to-touchdown mentality, where he has this ability to connect on these deep shots, to change the velocity of his throws, to put touch on them, all sorts of different things. He's got that ability. We've seen it numerous times here in practice. But that takes time. These guys are fast in the NFL, but they're, you know, like, they still have to take 2 or 3 seconds to get down the field. And these pass rushers are darn fast, too. They close fast. So if you got a Jason Peters who's going to be, he's approaching, 40 years old, just joined practice today for the first time. What is it, August 19th? Is he going to be ready in week one? You have all sorts of concerns. And if you're talking about a guy who can process things and in the pocket and get the ball quickly, like right now your answer is probably Andy Dalton.
And you don't have – I think what I've learned over time as I've talked to people in the league is that You have to look at the season not as a 16-game set or 17-game set. There are different chunks of it. You don't become the team you are until midseason or until around Thanksgiving. Like, you have to think about it that way. Like, if you give Efede some time to get back, maybe you solidify that right side. Maybe you have a solution on the left side as Borum gets more time or whatever. You piece it together over the first month or 6 weeks of the season. I think buying yourself a little bit more time might be worthwhile, because when it comes down to it, the only thing that matters is whether this guy succeeds. That's all that matters. Yeah. Like, organizationally, that's all that matters. And I think the kind of a side hallway conversation off of this, and I'm curious about your take. I think part of this and his timeline, we also have to consider what the timeline, the expectations, and the demands are on this coaching staff and front office. Because if this is a situation where they've been told you can see this through, maybe they're not as urgent about putting him out there, because if they're 1-3, that's okay. I have zero feel on what the temperature is with all of that stuff, so it's hard to know when they're going to feel the heat to put him in the game.
They have time to see this through.
And that is good to know.
Yes.
Because that leads you to not make panicked decisions.
Yes. I don't think this is... we have to compare it to 2017. Like, I hate the comparisons. Maybe I'm just sick of them, but... In 2017, you had a coach who was on a hot seat, who wasn't seen eye to eye with his general manager, a general manager who went rogue a little bit to go get his quarterback. That's a layered conversation for podcasts from before, but that was just a different situation than that exists right now, where Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy were hand in hand going from Alabama to Columbus, Ohio to scout these quarterbacks. They went through this together. They wanted to find their next quarterback together, and they will have time together to see this through. Now, look, this is where you got to clarify the conversation. If they have one win this year, sure, different conversations can be had, but this is not a one-win football team.
No.
I just look at last year. They had a quarterback controversy. They had a 6-game losing streak. And like we said, still managed to make the playoffs. Like, that's where they are. But, like, they're going to see this through. They're going to have time. Like you just listen to Matt Nagy, and you could tell he has time. He doesn't feel the pressure to rush it. Like, everything he says, every time he's brought up, yeah, he gets excited about Justin Fields. Who wouldn't be excited about Justin Fields? The guy's made some exceptional throws in practice. There's more reasons to be excited now than there were when he was drafted. But you just listen to him, and you just get the sense that he has time to see this through, that he sees value in him sitting, Justin Fields sitting during the regular season, whether that's 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever. There's value in what he can learn by sitting behind Andy Dalton. Like Matt Nagy sees value in that, and then you could sense that there is time to this process, and there's a patience to this that's probably expressed throughout the whole organization.
And I think that is a good sign. I think that is beneficial for the long-term development of Justin Fields, for the long-term health of the franchise, because there's just no reason to do this before you need to. I think all the other rookie quarterbacks, I think the moment they're ready to play, I'd be comfortable throwing them in the game simply because I have more faith in the infrastructure around them.
Yeah.
I mean, with all the offensive line moving pieces, I just think this is the most tenuous, fragile spot that a rookie quarterback could walk into among those first round guys. I mean, even the Jets, they draft a guard in the first round, they go get Morgan Moses. I mean, that is still a more stable situation to me than the one the Bears are facing right now because of everything that's happened over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and the Bears have tried.
Yes.
They drafted Tevin Jenkins in the second round. Obviously, the back issues come up. They drafted Larry Borum in the fifth round. Concussion issues develop. Can't plan for all those things. You could question what the doctors did or didn't see on the Tevin Jenkins evaluation when they went through all the health stuff you need to go through. But it's almost they're beyond that now, because now they have their surgery and he's going to be out for a while. You try Elijah Wilkinson. You drafted two guys last year. So they've tried, but not to the certain... I would just say the success isn't there. Even like a guy like James Daniels, who was playing so well last year, he gets hurt. Now he's back at right guard, which is a new position for him after playing left guard and center. So there just always seems to be a lot of moving pieces
100%.
For this offensive line. I think that's been like a lingering problem for the Ryan Pace era, is there's just been so many different faces So many different combinations up front in terms of that line.
And now it matters so much because of how valuable that guy is and how valuable his development is. And I think that they did try, and they did try to figure out a plan for this. But now that it hasn't necessarily worked out, you have to be nimble and you have to be flexible. You don't attach yourself to one version of this where it's like, we were going to have him out there week one and that was going to be it. If you don't feel comfortable about it, you can pivot. That's the reason Andy Dalton is here. So this is going to be a conversation we have 100,000 times over the next couple months here. Let's change gears to the defense a little bit. Sean Desai talked to all of us today. Obviously, there are high hopes for what he can bring to this unit because they still have big name, expensive guys on that side of the ball. Eddie Jackson, Khalil Mack, Eddie Goldman, Akeem Hicks. I mean, this is a group, Robert Quinn, that they really need to get a lot out of if this isn't going to be a one-win team. If you want to stay afloat this year and show that we're still playing hard, we're going places, we're making progress, I think the defense is going to need to do it as the offense kind of finds its footing. There, it seems to me like they're putting a lot of faith in Sean Desai's ability to get the most out of that group.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. You can even add names to that because there's going to be more money spent in that defense soon enough. Guys like Bilal Nichols, new contract. Yeah. Guys like Roquan Smith. I know they picked up his fifth-year option, so they have time. But
well, it's a top-10 pick. He's already expensive
contract. Yeah, and he sees guys at his position getting big contracts around the league, so that investment will continue on the defensive
side. Huge stretch for it, the Darius Leonard, Fred Warner stuff. I mean, that's big news for Roquan Smith.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, I would say just in terms of vibe and energy. I know these are like things you really can't like quantify, but at least what I'm seeing in this camp compared to last camp just seemed dull. I don't know if it was just the pandemic or they weren't buying into Chuck Pagano anymore, or it was just a number of things.
It felt like the whole team was in a holding pattern.
Yes.
I mean, they were just stuck in this middle ground where it's like, it's hard to get excited about Nick Foles. It just is. It's hard to be like, this is the guy that's going to take us there. And I think now you have a new quarterback. You have a 38-year-old defensive coordinator. I would hope the vibe would be different.
Yes, yeah. And it's visible. It's tangible. I mean, Sean Desai is on these guys. If you watch practice, I know you saw the glorified walkthrough today, but when these drills are live, I mean, he is very, very, like, I don't want to say, he's on the field. Like, he's screaming, not so much screaming like they're in trouble, but he is encouraging them loudly. He is correcting them almost immediately as they come off the field. There's just a lot of action coming from, a lot of energy. And I think you get that from his youthfulness. And it's also like these guys have known him for a long time. He's been in this with this team since Mark Trestman. I mean, he knows these guys before they were acquired. He was part of those evaluations. He's part of the development of Eddie Jackson. Like, he's known Akeem Hicks, like he said, since he's got here. Those connections help. And I think, like, if you listen to some of the players, they like having a young coach who has earned his way.
100%.
And I think that means something to him. You know, it may sound cheesy to some fans listening right now, but I think these players actually believe what they're saying when they say that, like it's real to them. Like, they believe in him because we've seen him earn it every step of his way, coming up as a quality control coach until defensive coordinator or to the defensive coordinator. Like, they see it and they believe in what he's saying.
I remember a couple of years ago before the Super Bowl, I was talking to Mike McDaniel, who at that point was the run game coordinator for the Niners. Mike McDaniel went to Yale. He didn't play college football. He didn't play in the NFL. He was talking about the Niners staff. And he was saying that it comes from Kyle all the way down, because Kyle didn't play in the NFL. And when you don't have that background, you have to prove it every single day that you're going to make the game easier on your guys, because that's how you earn respect. If you show every single day that you're invested in them and that you're going to make their jobs easier and you're going to allow them to make money and you're going to forward their development, they'll respect you, even if you don't have that background. And it seems like he is that sort of guy. I love guys that have done that. Kevin Stefanski has that background where he went through all of these different staffs and just kind of worked his way up and up and up. And I think that gives you a really well-rounded understanding of the game. And I think we intellectualize guys like Sean Desai a lot, right? Like, he has a doctorate. That we do that. But that energy and that fire and that I'm going to get in these guys. I'm really going to be somebody that pushes them. And like, we need to play this certain way. It takes the intellectual part out of it and becomes a football coach.
Yeah.
And I think that we underrate that aspect of it too often with these brainiac type coaches and what we expect out of them.
Well, you need that bravado.
You do.
You really do. I think I mentioned them just seconds ago. The Mark Trestman era is a perfect example where you had this, let's use the term brainiac coach, who had his quirks, but you needed that bravado. You needed that gumption to get in guys' faces and give them the business a few times, because that team that Mark Trestman had, and Sean Desai knows this, you need to give some of those guys the business a few times. There's a lot of personalities in that Mark Trestman era.
There certainly were.
But you have to take control. Like, you're the man in charge. That's how Sean Desai, I think he's learned from that. And he's got such a range of influences. And it goes back to the Trestman era too, like working with John Hoke.
Yeah.
And some of those guys from the Fox staffs, you know? Of course, Fangio and Donatello brought up, but he's got such a range of different influences, guys that have imparted knowledge at every step of the way every part of the defense, from, up front to outside linebacker, inside linebacker to the secondary, even to safeties. It's so specific for him. Those range of influences, they're going to turn into whatever the Sean Desai defense is, because he's going to be a bit different than Vic Fangio, just like Brandon Staley's a bit different than Vic Fangio.
Absolutely.
Similarities, but different at the same time.
But let's be honest, this is trying to catch the Brandon Staley wave. I don't know, and this, maybe I'm reading a little bit too much into it, and they have liked him in the building. I think it's easier to talk yourself into this in the post-Brandon Staley world. They're trying to catch similar magic, I would have to assume, where you look at a Fangio disciple kind of on the rise. It's a young coach. Look at how it's just kind of sprinkled around the league. This is, I think, one of those examples of a team really trying to catch what's happening schematically around the rest of the NFL. Yeah. It's the hot trend.
It's matching innovation with innovation.
Yep.
You know, I hate to always link it to young guys, but that's just what it is. I think sometimes is Staley's a perfect example. You know, you got to adjust, adapt, or you die. You don't win, and that's the name of the game, isn't it? I think Sean, you're right in saying this. He's from that same innovation mindset where if he doesn't have an answer, he's going to do something to find an answer that's different than maybe Vic would do it.
And I think, but that is 100% true. But this is, I think, a league-wide effort to kind of crack the Fangio code for the first time.
Yeah.
It is, how can we kind of crack that open and pour it out and see what's inside Vic Fangio's head? Because I think that's been a really difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
I think people have struggled to do that.
Right.
And now I think that you see so many people and so many teams try to grab somebody from that, pluck someone off that tree and say, can we get a version of this? And I think the Bears are trying to do that. And I'm excited to see what it looks like.
Yeah, I think it bodes well for a few certain players.
Eddie Jackson is the first person that comes to mind. It's like, I want him in that too high shell all the time, how he played in 2018. Yeah.
He made an interception the other day. God, where was it? It was kind of down the right seam. I'm trying to recall it visually. But that was that's the Eddie Jackson that we remember from 2018. The way he's moving a lot before the snap too, to not give things away. And then just breaks on a ball. God, who was it thrown to? It was definitely Andy Dalton, but it was just one of those plays that you saw all the time, or at least the gambles that Eddie Jackson would take all the time in 2018 and more often than not be successful on it. So that was, to me, that was a couple days ago. All these days are blending together, my man. That was, to me, where I'm like, oh my gosh, that is what the Bears have been waiting for. That's what they're trying to unlock. Again, a word from the press conference with Sean Desai today. They need to unlock that again. Make him be your best playmaker again. I think you're going to get that with Sean Desai.
And they need that. I mean, this is, you look at this group and you look at the Rams last year, and it's a comparison you have to keep making in your mind. I know I do it all the time, but it's not like they had 11 super high quality starters on paper before the season. Leonard Floyd was available, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, this team didn't want him. And Brandon Staley will tell you that. These are guys that maybe weren't as highly coveted as they were at the end of last season. And the Bears, they have enough pieces. It's maybe there's questions about the second corner or things like that, but at the same time, you still have Khalil Mack, you still have Eddie Jackson, you still have Roquan Smith. You have enough queens on the chessboard to build a really good defense around this group, even if there are some concerns here or there.
Yeah.
And they're going to need to be.
Yeah. And you're going to point to certain guys like Jalen Johnson to step up.
Yes.
You've seen signs of that in camp. He's actually been really good, just in terms of recent observations. A lot of ball production.
I love him. Like, I think he's going to be a really good player. Yeah. I mean, I thought he was really good as a rookie last year.
A lot of PBUs, a couple interceptions recently in camp, which is a point of emphasis for him. Instead of all the like pass breakups are nice, but how about we catch
Let's
some
take
of those?
The ball away. Let's take the ball away.
Takeaways. And like, that's another thing with Sean Desai. He's just the energy he brings, even something as some like this takeaway bucket stuff. It's goofy. Let's be honest.
So what is it? Where is it?
So it's this blue bin. It's like a towel bin. You know, that's how it started. And
I was imagining like a painter bucket. So now I'm glad to know it's much bigger
than
that.
So it's like we're like a laundry towel bin, you know, like you would see around NFL locker rooms. And they brought this out during the offseason program. And Sean Desai wants the guys to celebrate like every takeaway that they get. He wants there to be some excitement, some fire, some passion. So these guys are dunking it in there. They're shooting it in there. They tried... someone from the equipment staff actually made like a basketball version of this. They broke it during,
I'm sure, the first day.
The first day. Yeah. But that's how much they're into it. And like some of these things, you know, you roll your eyes sometimes. All you know, the coaches do things to excite their guys, but they love it. They scream for it when takeaways are made in practice. It's literally like rolled out into the field, so like practice kind of stops and like guys are, you know,
I'm really upset that I missed this. Yeah, like, I wasn't here on day
where they're trying to dunk it between their legs, you know, and you know Nagy loves that type of stuff too, because he loves the back and forth that he gets from the defense and stuff like that. So like we didn't see any type of stuff like that with Chuck Pagano whatsoever. And with all due respect to Chuck Pagano, like he was in charge of some really good defenses in the NFL. But like
35 years, 40 years into his coaching career, you know, it's like
you stick around for a reason. Yeah. But like, I think at this point with a lot of these players, they needed something new, fresh, maybe something young, you know, someone closer in age. And you're seeing guys really respond to what Sean Desai is saying like every single day.
That's what I love to hear. You're speaking my language now. Adam Johns, always good to talk to you, my friend. I really, really appreciate the time. It's good to spend some time with you in a coat closet here.
Anytime. There's like a TV behind us stored away here too. But like
storage closet, coat closet, it's whatever you can do.
Podcast studio.
All right, bud. We'll talk to you later.
Anytime.
All right, guys. That's all we got for today. Sincerely appreciate the time from Nate and from Adam. Again, Nate will be with us again early next week as we start our division previews. We will be back on Friday. We're going to do a little something different. I'm going to wait to share it with you, but I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a fun little twist. Get some other people from The Athletic covering a couple different sports involved in the show in some little way here. Until then, please rate and review the podcast on your podcast platform of choice. I sincerely appreciate that. Also, please subscribe to The Athletic. So much good stuff on the site. Again, you cannot get ready for the NFL season without the resources that we have at The Athletic, theathletic.com/football show. Please check it out. We'll be back on Friday. Until then, thank you so much for listening. Talk to you guys soon.
This was The Athletic Football Show.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.